Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan and gluten-free offerings. Love to hear the word vegan. They also offer craft beer and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 days a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. Ken believes in the importance of community radio and encourages other members of the medical community to join the KZFR underwriting family. That's Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Hannah Kibler, filling in for Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about a precedent-setting wrongful death award in a lawsuit for a dog killed by a police officer in Connecticut. We're also going to talk about vegans taking the podium at the 2017 Naturally Fit competition in Austin.
Awesome.
And the rise of the chickpea on Canadian farms. Over to you, Jeannie.
Hooray for chickpeas.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Hannah. It's nice to have you back here.
Good to be back.
Back in May, Laura Goldman of the Care2 website and Rachel Pasella at the Virginia Capital Gazette newspaper reported on a civil lawsuit over the tragic shooting of a family's pet dog by a police officer in Virginia. Rodney Price, a rookie officer with the County Police Department, was canvassing a neighborhood in February 2014 looking for witnesses to a burglary. He said he was confronted by Vern, a pedigreed Chesapeake Bay Retriever, in the front yard of the home of the dog's owner, Michael Reeves. Officer Price shot Vern twice, killing the dog. The officer claimed that Vern was barking and running towards him, but the evidence showed that one of the bullets entered the dog's side, so that indicated that the dog was not head-on towards Price, but was actually perpendicular to the gun to Officer Price. At the time of Vern's death, the county police chief met with Vern's family, offering condolences and promising a complete investigation into the incident. Meanwhile, the police officer, Rodney Price, was placed on administrative duty. The internal investigation concluded that Vern was an aggressive dog, which justified the shooting. Officer Price was exonerated and then returned to active duty. He's still employed with the police department there, the Capital Gazette of Virginia reported. Vern's owner, in turn, filed a lawsuit against the police department over the matter. 3 years and 3 months later, after Vern was killed, the case went to a jury trial, and the jury disagreed with the results of the police investigation. During the three-day trial, Officer Price admitted that Vern had neither bitten nor injured him before he shot him, and that he, the officer, took no steps to humanely deal with Vern before pulling the trigger. Jurors were asked to clarify if they thought Vern the dog had attacked the officer, and they all said no. The jury then decided that the shooting had violated the owner's property rights and that the officer had committed gross negligence in shooting and killing Vern. Vern had been a member of the Reeves family since 2009, so he was about 5 years old at the time of the shooting when he was killed. The neighboring family testified and reported that they'd never even heard the dog growl, only bark. After the three-day trial, the jury awarded Reeves and his family, I can't believe how much they awarded the family, $1.26 million for the unnecessary shooting of their dog by a police officer. The settlement is the largest of its kind in U.S. history. The numbers are boggling. The settlement included $500,000, $500,000 in monetary damages because Reeves, who is a defense contractor, had to take a significant amount of time off from work to deal with the grieving, and I would guess with engaging with the police department. The jury also awarded $760,000 in damages for anguish caused by the senseless murder of the beloved pet.
How do you really put a price on that, you know?
Well, evidently the jury tried to, and they put a big price tag on that.
Yeah.
County officials have not commented on the settlement, and of course it is on appeal. So, but a little background. Every year, it turns out that an estimated 10,000 pet dogs are shot and killed by police officers in the United States, and which, if you do the math, that turns out to be one every 98 minutes. And to prevent these deaths, there are steps being taken across the country to train law enforcement officers in how to humanely deal with dogs and other pets. I think a lot of it is just they may be in some kind of stressful situation and they just don't know how to react, so they react badly. Anyway, and doing a little more research, in January of last year, a jury awarded a Colorado man $262,000 for the wrongful death of his therapy dog, Chloe, who had also been shot and killed by a police officer. At the time, that was the largest settlement of its kind. So these verdicts.
I'm wondering if that's something that's going to be trending. If there's one being shot every 98 minutes, maybe we'll start to see more of these cases popping up.
Yeah. I'm sure we will. And it may be that, you know, part of police officer training also involves, you know, how to maybe some like animal control officer type training, how to assess a dog, how to not kill it, you know, how not to pull out your gun as your first response to a dog. And a lot of that probably is related to how the officer comports himself and his body language, because dogs, they're very good at reading body language. So anyway, so these verdicts, I think they send a strong message to police officers about their treatment of companion animals. And they also show that companion animals are worth much, much more than what can be considered their, quote, fair market value to their owners, which has been the approach that the courts have taken towards these types of deaths, both as these police officer deaths, but also say like malpractice in a veterinary practice, where it's like the animal's worth X amount of dollars, how much you paid for him or her, and that's what the replacement value of the animal is. But these judgments are showing that pain and suffering and are an element in the assessment of the award, and that they are being considered family members, which they are.
It's good to see they're really factoring that extra element in.
Yeah, just to add this extra layer of how we view non-human animals in our judicial system. So,
I think this is a really great step forward, but let's take a step back and look at it in context. So to kind of bring it over to another topic, each year there's a celebration in China commonly referred to as the Yulin Dog Meat Festival.
What was that?
It's called the Yulin Dog Meat Festival.
Okay.
And it's to celebrate the beginning of summer. It happens on the summer solstice every year. And so many Chinese practitioners of like folk medicine believe that dog meat helps to ward off the heat felt throughout the summer months. But actually, the festival only began a few years ago. I think it was probably in 2009. If I remember right.
Really?
Yeah, so it's not exactly an ancient tradition that they're carrying on.
Not a centuries old?
No.
Tradition, okay.
So it spans about 10 days, during which an estimated 10,000 to 15,000 dogs are consumed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. During the festivities, dogs are paraded in wooden crates and metal cages, and then they're taken to be skinned and cooked for consumption by festival visitors and local residents. So you can only imagine how, with social media, these images coming out, like how that's kind of sparked a lot of worldwide protests.
Oh, so like people around the rest of the world are criticizing this particular festival because...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's been petitions signed. There's hashtags Stop Yulin. And I know that in more recent years, due to this pressure and protest, the number of dogs killed has dropped pretty significantly to, I believe in 2015, it was around 1,000.
Okay, so the 10 to 15,000 number, that's like the height, maybe from a few years ago, before social media?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But this year, the New York Times actually reported that activists had won a small victory and that government and municipal officials in Yulin had agreed to ban the sale of dog meat in the week before the event. But even so, 1,000 dogs over a 10-day period is still 100 dogs being killed each day. And that in itself is pretty awful. But then you look at what's happening here at home and you realize that we're killing far more dogs in our own shelters every day.
But not for food.
Not for food.
Okay.
According to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, approximately 6.5 million companion animals enter U.S. animal shelters every year. And that's split evenly, about half dogs, half cats.
Okay.
And of those, about 670,000 dogs and 860,000 cats are euthanized every single year.
So wow.
If you kind of break down those numbers, 670,000 dogs is like 67 days of the Yulin Festival. And when you look at it that way, it kind of makes me wonder if maybe we should be protesting ourselves, too.
That's always the thing, right? Like, he who is without sin be the first to, you know, cast a stone, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, the optics, the logistics of people criticizing what goes on with animals in other countries can be really warped, because it's turning a blind eye to our own actions. We're actually more effective in making change, right? I mean,
right.
I think that our leverage on China as social media protesters or whatever is weak. I think that change in society towards non-human animals needs to originate locally.
Oh, absolutely.
It needs to originate on starting from your plate outwards, in my opinion. So anyway, but it seems like social media has, despite my saying that, it seems like social media has had an effect on this, and maybe it's bolstered the local activists in China to be able to put more pressure on their local officials, because clearly this kind of ban on, what is the ban specifically? It's banning the sale of dog meat in the week before the event. Clearly that kind of ban has to happen at a local
level, yeah.
A local municipal level, right?
I think of what I've read of the activism that's happened, that was the most effective, was when a lot of people will travel to China for this event and kind of protest it, but it's the people that stay afterwards that kind of are continually working with local governments to really make sure these things are happening.
So, yeah. So, and in terms of, like, locally, we just saw, recently I saw flying across my media stream that the Front Street Animal Shelter in Sacramento was full up. They had no more space for dogs and cats in their kennels. And so they put out a call on social media. Maybe some of the Chico folks have seen this, because we're relatively local to that. And thanks to social media, the shelter saw nearly four times as many adoptions following their social media call for help. It went viral. And the shelter also had waived all adoption fees in June to help encourage adoptions. And in less than 2 weeks, almost 300 compassionate adopters came out to give those animals from the Front Street Animal Shelter homes. And yeah, some of those dogs have been waiting over three, you know, very adoptable dogs have been waiting over 3 months waiting to be adopted. And I know that's the case here in Chico. The Humane Society has had some dogs in their kennels for a year or more, and they've been trying to find homes for those puppies.
I think it's amazing, because I remember seeing the post at the end of May, and I saw them repost about it, and I was blown away that in less than 2 weeks they had adopted out that many. And
yeah,
I think
great.
A lot of it has to do with word of mouth and getting that out there. So
yeah, and you know, Americans have a soft spot for dogs. We maybe have less of a soft spot for cows and pigs in our hearts, right?
Right. But there's still so many, despite this great news that this many animals have been adopted, there's still so many that are still in shelters. And I think it's interesting to imagine how we would respond if thousands of people worldwide were protesting the United States for the number of dogs that we kill each year in our shelters.
Yeah, turnaround is fair play, huh?
Yeah. What if they were to call for a ban on breeding or the sale of dogs in the United States at all? I could see some people arguing that the reasons for the deaths are different. Maybe it bothers them more that people are caging them and slaughtering them for meat because in our culture, dogs are seen as companions. However, there are parts of the world where the animals that we slaughter are not seen as food, like cows, for example.
Yeah.
And I think the Yulin Festival is a useful example, be it unfortunate, but it's useful to try to expand empathy for all animals, especially farm animals like cows and pigs. Because if you never thought of farm animals as anything but food or commodities, you might have your way of thinking jolted out of its tracks by the realization that your shock or disgust at the idea of a dog being killed for food or being wantonly killed by a police officer like Vern was is at its core really no different than the shock or disgust at the idea of a cow or a chicken being killed for food.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, all non-human animals are worthy of compassion.
Yeah.
And worthy of respect, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, anyway, that was an interesting story. I think that a simple test that I use when engaging with people about veganism and the way we treat non-human animals is, you know, I call it the empathy test.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, would you do this to your dog? You know, in terms of, we've talked about animal agriculture and the mutilation practices of castration without anesthetic or dehorning. Would you do that to your dog? And if the answer is no, then why would you allow it to be done to a cow or a pig or some other critter? So,
yeah.
Anyway, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. What's next, Hannah?
All right. Well, our next story is actually about the vegan nonprofit bodybuilding team called Plant Built, who collectively won 32 medals during the 2017 Naturally Fit Games in Austin, and that was last Saturday. The games welcomed 1,000 competitors, including the 39-person Plant Built squad.
39? That's a lot.
Okay. I know. They're representing, right?
Yep.
The games included a range of fitness events, including endurance kettlebell, powerlifting, bodybuilding, Olympic weightlifting, and CrossFit. In addition to winning 22 first-place medals, the vegan team's own Sarah Lee set both the world and American records for kettlebell. Plant Built was founded in 2013 by husband and wife team Danny Taylor and Giacomo Marchese. The group's aim in competing at these events is to prove that consuming animal products is not necessary for building muscle.
And what better way to prove it but than by bringing home a first place medal, right?
Right. And, you know, just breaking a few records while you're at it. Marchese told the plant-based news website that as long as the meat and potatoes crowd exists in strength-based sports, we will continue to educate and dispel the myth that you need to eat meat to build muscle and strength.
And you know what else is prevalent in the strength-based sports crowd?
What?
Whey protein.
Yes.
Whey, as in milk protein. Mm-hmm. It's so prevalent. You know, you look at the protein powders at the store, and it's like, we have whey, and it's just not necessary.
No, but people are very specific about where they want their protein to come from.
Yeah.
And whey, for, I think, marketing purposes, has kind of been marketed as being better. And so a lot of people truly believe that.
Yeah. All right, carry on.
The team hopes to add new team members in 2019 and to compete in a wider variety of sports. So if you have some fitness goals you're trying to achieve and you want to try to go for it, they're going to try to include things such as strongman and jiu-jitsu, as well as the ones that they're already doing. To date, there's more than 100 athletes from countries all around the world, including Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, among many others, that have competed with the plant-built team.
Rock on.
Yeah, so it's not just you know, something that's going on here. They're drawing people worldwide, which I think is really cool. The team has raised $20,000 to support vegan outreach organizations, nonprofits, and farmed animal sanctuaries.
Oh, you mean they're not all about themselves?
Nope.
Great.
I really love the idea of going out and showing that a vegan diet can support strong and capable athletes. I think it's really great activism because some people respond better to something they can see rather than data from scientific articles. I think it's also worth mentioning that the plant-built kettlebell competitor Sarah Lee is 39 years old and setting records, which is pretty incredible. As far as athletes go, 39 isn't young to be setting records.
She must be really determined.
Yeah. I think it just goes to show that a healthy vegan diet can not only support a strong body, but it can help people to stay healthier throughout their entire life.
That's awesome. So I looked it up, and the category that she won in is called the, let's see, she competed in the at the 130-pound weight level, so she weighs 130 pounds or less, in what's called the 52-pound kettlebell one-arm long cycle event. And that's an event where you hold this giant kettlebell, a 52-pound kettlebell, in one hand, and it starts down on the ground between your legs, like in a squat, and then you lift this thing up over your head with a straight arm, and you bring it back down, and then you pick it up again, and you do that again. You do that for 10 minutes. And the winner is whoever can do the most reps in 10 minutes. And this woman, this 39-year-old woman, did she did 104 reps of this.
That's
of
crazy.
This weight. So kudos to you, Sarah Lee. That's awesome. So anyway, yeah. Yeah, so keep your eyes on her. Hopefully we'll see her as a competitor and a vegan advocate in the future. I'm sure she will.
Definitely.
So anyway, so onward. One last story, and that's we're going to talk about blueberries and chickpeas, which are two of my favorite things to eat. Veg News recently shared a story on some welcome trends in Canadian agriculture. An income data report released by the government agency in Canada, Statistics Canada, found that animal agriculture on Prince Edward Island is declining. Awesome. Farmers are profiting from plant-based crops such as blueberries, potatoes, and soy. From 2000 to 2016, the value of the pig industry in the area, which had been one of the major ag industries on Prince Edward Island, fell by more than $20 million, while the soy and blueberry industries became valued at $16 and almost $9 million. So $25 million worth of plants being sold as opposed to $20 million worth of pigs. So some farmers are doing well.
Another reason to love Canada.
Oh, Canada. So, additionally, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation reported that there are only a few dozen pig farmers left on the island compared to hundreds that were in operation in 2008. So, good for Canada. And then in the United States, farmers are now planting 53% more chickpeas this year in anticipation of increasing demand for plant-based protein. So, according to the USDA, U.S. farmers expect to produce 53% more chickpeas than they did in 2013. They're planted on nearly 500,000 acres in the United States, which just makes me happy because you know what chickpeas are? Chickpeas are hummus, falafel, chana masala, all these like really yummy things. And because we haven't had any nutrition facts in a while, I looked it up. Chickpeas, a one cup serving of chickpeas provides 39 grams of protein and half your daily recommended amount of fiber. So that is, and they're cheap.
Yeah, they're one of those foods that are cheap, they're delicious, and you can feel good about eating them because they're actually good for you.
So anyway, I just think that's great. It sounds like the legume marketers are doing a good job of selling us on hummus and falafel and other goodies. So it's good. Oh, and that what was it you're telling me about? Hippies?
Yes. So at my work, we're always bringing in new products, and I keep seeing new products, and probably one of my new favorite ones are these chickpea puffs called Hippies. And you can also find them at Starbucks. So, you know,
awesome.
If you're stuck at the airport and you need some delicious vegan food, I highly suggest the white cheddar flavor.
Which is vegan?
All of them are vegan, yeah.
Oh, that's great. So you can get a cheesy flavor, but it's vegan.
Yes.
Okay, so you got some nutrition information about chickpeas, and then you got some healthy snack, junk foody type suggestions. All right. So, yeah, hippies. All right. Hippeas. Hip peas.
Yeah.
All right. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
And now it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar events. Get ready to mark your calendars.
All right. We'll do a little abbreviated version. Thanks, Hannah. Summer's here, and of course, there are some great events to put on your summer to-do list. And if you need more info, please send an email to me at chicovegan@gmail.com or message me at Non-Human Radio on Facebook. So I just want to say there's a great event coming up this Sunday, June 18th, at the Pageant Theater. It's called the Earth First Roadshow. And if you're a rabble-rouser, water protector, land defender, animal rights activist, and a resistor, the 2017 Earth First Roadshow will be bringing campaign and history presentations and updates on Earth First. And they'll be talking about issues on Earth-centric philosophy, tactics, water issues, and species defense in resistance to the Trump agenda. And there will be vegan snacks. So that's this Sunday evening at the Pageant Theater on Sunday, June 18th. And then also put on your calendar next Saturday, June 24th, is the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room.
Always one of my favorites.
Yeah, this month's theme is barbecue, vegan barbecue, just in time for summer picnics and 4th of July. So you can find info and details and the schedule for the whole year at chicovegan.com. And as always, Nancy will be there coordinating a table full of plant-based Chico, the plant-based Chico group, whole food, plant-based, no salt, no oil, no sugar goodies. That'll be one table, and the rest of the table will rest of the tables will be like going crazy with oily, rich foods. Not oily necessarily, but no fear of fat.
But will all be delicious.
Yes, hopefully all will be delicious. Mostly everything is really, really good. And so that's it. We have one last bit of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Hannah.
All right, our quote for this week is from Sarah Lee from the Plant Belt Competitive Fitness Team. The one who does the kettlebell, and she says, "Moms shouldn't lose their babies. I can't honor the relationship between parent and child and do that to another mom. All animal products represent the loss of somebody's whole world, and the only way for me to live my values is to be vegan."
That's so awesome.
Yeah. It's and really so, great to see somebody live, you know, their morals.
That's what I try to do every day, and I hope folks will try to align their values with their actions. And like I said, a really good place to start is on the plate. You know, even if like the rest of the world is going crazy and we have so little control about what's going on at upper levels of politics or even our own local politics, we can always take a moment to have a little compassion on our plate.
Absolutely.
Even if it's just one meal at a time, it makes a difference to the animals you're not eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you send a ripple, right? You send a ripple to those observing you, you know, taking a moment to be kinder.
You do. You do. And no amount of compassion is ever unimportant.
Very well said. Very well said. Let us not underestimate the value of a single decision, right? Even
right.
if you, you know, aren't going to go full-blown 100% vegan, if you try it out as an exercise in compassion for one meal a day or a week, or
it matters.
It
even
matters
just that one time.
And guess what? You'll learn that it's not going to kill you.
No, it won't.
No, it won't. Come to a potluck and you can see it's actually quite delicious and wonderful. So
it really is. All right. Well, Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, go to the archives at kzfr.org. This is Hannah Kibler and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, and be kind.
And go vegan.